Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, which today is Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators in action tonight, 7 o'clock against the Pittsburgh Penguins. What a wild weekend of college football. We had the Iron Bowl come down to a 4th-and-31. We had Washington State come down to a field goal where Michael Penix Jr. couldn't even watch it. We had Michigan-Ohio State, which that's all you really need to say with that matchup. And then, of course, to cap off the most dramatic day of the college football season, we had what I'm going to call affectionately Mark Stoopsgate. But joining us now to break it all down is Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you for joining us. Hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving weekend. I want to start here with Texas A&M. It was reported that Mark Stoops was going to be the guy, and then, just kidding, never mind, a few hours later, it was Mark Stoops wanted to stay at Kentucky, Texas A&M went back to the drawing board, and then it was announced yesterday that Mike Elko, former defensive coordinator at Texas A&M and head coach at Duke, will be the head coach at Texas A&M. What did you make of all of that? What did you make of the potential hire of Mark Stoops and now the ultimate hire of Mike Elko?
Well, I think the Elko hire I like a lot. I don't know if we talked about it, but several weeks ago, once they made the move, he would have been the first guy I talked to. But Texas A&M, being that it's Texas A&M, could not do something without drama. So they ended up with a very, you know, sane, normal hire. But of course, the roundabout way they got to that route, you know, with infighting and, you know, do we really want to hire Mark Stoops and all this? And, you know, you could argue. Now, I like Elko, but you could argue that Mark Stoops is just Elko with 10 more years of experience or whatever it is as a head coach. I mean, very similar kind of backgrounds, and they look, you know, similar demeanor and all that stuff. But I really like Elko. I don't think it's, like, mandatory that you have experience at Texas A&M like he does, but I think it helps. That's a kind of a unique culture down there. He's recruited, you know, he's recruited in Notre Dame. He's recruited at Duke, Wake Forest. He's an Ivy League guy, Jersey native. So, you know, obviously he's got a lot going for him right there. So, I'm just really impressed with what Duke did. You know, everyone loves David Cutcliffe, but that program had fallen on really hard times when he got there. They were really bad the last couple of years, got good immediately. And I kind of applaud Texas A&M for not falling off the Elko bandwagon, even though Duke struggled down the stretch. You know, their quarterback got hurt, Riley Leonard. You could see why they weren't as good, because his record's not great. I think they went 7-5 this year. So, again, long-winded answer, Caroline. I really like the hire. I think he's a good fit there, and he brings kind of some normalcy to that program.
And, by the way, yes, Mitch is from New Jersey, slipping that in there. I heard that.
Yes. And before we go on, I have something very important to ask Caroline.
Yes.
I need some guidance. I can't disclose who my Heisman vote is. You're not allowed to do that. But do you have any suggestions, maybe? Who I should go for?
You know, she already said it before you even.
Yeah, she already said it.
Jane Daniels. Yeah. Okay. I went on a diatribe this morning. I do a hit with Robbie and Rexford every morning on Tuesdays. I went on a diatribe of my campaign for Jaden Daniels. I mean, the stats aren't even close. Passing stats are close. The rushing stats completely set Jaden Daniels apart. He's gone against tougher defenses. LSU has the number one strength of schedule. Jaden Daniels has better stats against top 25 opponents. The only thing holding him back is the fact that Jaden Daniels can't play defense.
Well, maybe if he played defense, you know, a little Travis Hunter action, he'd have better shot. But
he might be a better option than what LSU's gotten defensively.
I will take your suggestions under advisement as I move
forward. I will
send
you a full report, and I will have that to your email by end of day.
Thank you very, very much. I will review it with my team.
Vanderbilt, Tennessee. I mean, I said earlier that I saw Clark Lee's face reach shades of red that I didn't even know were humanly possible, and I watch LSU and Brian Kelly every single
day.
It was the two back-to-back, you know, calls that were blown dead, and then, you know, of course, Tennessee players, they're playing defense. Clark Lee gets angry. He gets frustrated. What was a first down then turned into, what, a third and 39. What did you make of that situation from, you know, just a college football perspective and also from a Vanderbilt perspective?
Yeah, so a little caveat, as I've told you guys, like my work Saturdays, sometimes I'm like sitting around doing nothing but watching games, and sometimes I have to work for like an hour. And this was a time when I was kind of busy. So like I had it on, the game on. I definitely watched it, but I wasn't like honing in, like replaying. Could you hear the whistle and all that stuff? So, you know, it looked, the first one looked pretty bad, you know, the way A.J. Swan's demeanor, you know, you can see when a quarterback has given up on a play, like there's a whistle. Like, I don't think you need to hear a whistle if you're a defensive player when you see a quarterback just in that, and everyone stopped. So it's difficult not being there and, you know, because really it's loud and you can't really hear. So I understand Clark Lee's frustration 100%. I mean, the season they've had there. And then you think you know, as he said, he's trying to protect his guys. And I have been, you know, down on the sidelines where I was a sideline reporter for Vanderbilt for 7 years. So some good teams and some bad teams. And there's no doubt when you're having a bad season and then you're losing a rivalry game like that. And, you know, you can't really exact revenge on the field because you're getting beat bad. There's frustrations that, you know, boil over and, you know, the offensive linemen, you know, trying to protect their quarterback. So I'm not surprised it got to where it got after those two hits. Again, I'm not saying they were, you know, warranted or unwarranted, you know, just watching them, they seem unwarranted, but it's just frustration. I don't think the officials did the best job possible of controlling the situation there. So, you know, I applaud Clark Lee for defending his guys. I'm sure a lot of that was frustration and just a frustrating way for Vanderbilt's really disappointing season to end.
Now we got championship weekend coming up, and I think every game this weekend, Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, Iowa, Washington, Oregon, Florida State, Louisville, those games are going to be must-watches because obviously whoever loses, they end up out of the college football playoffs. Which team you believe is in the most danger? Is it, I believe it's Washington and Oregon, but Iowa is a good team. They're one of the best defenses in college football in regards to points. Does Michigan have anything to worry about with that one? But the way I'm looking at it, I think the one team is Washington and Oregon.
Yeah, the spread jumps out at you in that game, Derek. It's 9 points or whatever it was. You know, Washington beats Oregon, what, about 6 weeks ago? But as I always say, like we kind of make fun of the committee sometimes in some of their terms, but I'm kind of a fan of game control. Like it's not just did you win your games? I know that's the ultimate goal, but how did you look doing so? And Washington, give them all the credit in the world. They have been playing with fire for multiple weeks now, and they almost got burned last week. I think they're better than TCU, but they're sort of like the TCU team of last year. You know, they found ways to win. You look at TCU, they won by 7 points, 3 points, walk-off field goals at Baylor. You're like, you know, they ultimately lost their championship game and still got in. And I think Washington's a better team, but there's a reason the line is 9 points. You know, Oregon, if I'm talking game control, Oregon has been dominating every game. They've been maybe the most impressive team in the country since that Washington game there. So I'm really fascinated to see what happens here. You know, Washington can kind of shut us all up because everyone's picking Oregon. I just love the winner-take-all part of that game. Now, if Washington loses, are there scenarios where they might have a shot? I guess. Obviously, if Oregon loses, they're done. But to your Michigan-Iowa, I would be shocked if Iowa was competitive in this game. They were a bad offensive team. They were healthy. Yeah, when they were healthy with Cade McNamara and Eric Ault, the tight end. You know, Deacon Hill, that quarterback, I mean, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he should not be playing quarterback in a league championship game. I mean, if you watch that Nebraska game, that was atrocious offensive football there. So, you know, they might muck it up and make things difficult for Michigan, but I think this is going to be like a 21-3 type game. I'd be shocked if Iowa was competitive into the fourth quarter.
Now, is Georgia the only team that could theoretically lose and still make the college football playoff? I'm talking amongst the top four undefeated teams.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we assume because it's the SEC and Georgia, like, it's very difficult, but you sort of have to remove Georgia, two-time defending national champs, and treat them for who they are this year. Like, if you're comparing a one-loss Georgia team and a one-loss Washington team, I don't know that Georgia has a better resume than Washington. I think they're a better team. I think the middle of the middle of the Pac-12 is better than the middle of the SEC this year. And Georgia's best wins are, what, Missouri and Ole Miss at home. Two very solid teams. So I think that would be really, really interesting if Georgia loses. I think they would get it in. I think they'd get the benefit of the doubt, and it's very difficult. There's the human element of, like, not removing the fact that they're the two-time defending national champs, but that's what you have to do. I mean, I watched a decent amount of the Georgia Tech game. Georgia Tech's fine, solid, you know, average team. They did not have much trouble moving the ball in Georgia. So it was sort of that Georgia team earlier in the year rearing its head where they're kind of messing around. They weren't dominating like we'd seen them do in the previous month.
That's a really interesting point. So do we think if Alabama wins, it's automatic that they're in?
I do. I think the SEC – you mean if Alabama wins, automatic that Alabama's in?
Yeah.
Or yes, I would think the SEC champ with a win over Georgia. Now, I'm just sitting here telling you how I don't think Georgia's like the best team in the history of the world. But, a win over Georgia with what they have done. You know, I'm looking at their resume. You can make the same arguments about lack of quality wins. They did lose to Texas at home. I think, you know, I'm sure you guys have been talking about it all week. We've talked about it. The committee looks – there are more scenarios this year where the committee has to make very difficult decisions.
Yes.
You know, if we're looking at this honestly, there have not been very many difficult decisions in the 10 years or whatever it was. The first year was very tough, you know, when TCU and Baylor got left out. But last year, I mean, Ohio State made it basically because there weren't enough good teams. And TCU was like a 3 seed, and they lost their conference championship game. So it's – there's a committee. There's 13 people, I believe. It's not one person. You know, sometimes we think it's just, oh, they say this team's better. Well, there could be 7-6. There could be a lot of discussion going on there. And it's, you know, there's coaches in there. There's administrators. What do you value? Do you value game control? Like, do you dismiss Alabama's win against, like, not dismiss, but you say, it doesn't matter. It's a rivalry game. They won in Auburn. Or do you look and say, hey, Auburn lost to New Mexico State the previous week. They only beat them by three on a miracle. This is not a great team. So there's so many different ways to look at these teams.
And along those lines, I think because of what you just said, Mitch, there's so many teams that have an argument. Mm-hmm. I wonder how each committee member feels about the value of the league championship as opposed to being on the outside looking in. Like Ohio State probably sitting there going, we've lost one game. It was at Michigan. It was right down to the last possession. It was a game that seesawed back and forth. It was a good game, but they're not in the championship game. But people have made it like that before.
Yes, we have. But I think last year they made it because there weren't other suitable teams. Like, I think they would take a conference champion, you know. I see what you're saying. Ohio State, you know, you could step back. Ohio State has one good win. You know, they beat Penn State. And they had the opportunity, and they lost to Michigan. So I think they're in a tough spot. One other thing, too, and, you know, Texas is sitting out there. Texas might end up being the best team of the college football playoff era not to make it. And, yep. You know, you can do the whole Texas versus Alabama thing. Head-to-head is really only something you look at when two teams are considered even by the committee. I think Texas's problem is they're not going to be compared to Alabama because if Alabama wins, I think they might be the 2 seed behind Michigan or maybe the 3 seed. And Texas is going to be compared to maybe a, you know, Florida State. See what I'm getting? So, like, if they're comparing Texas and Alabama, then I think Texas has a – they won in Tuscaloosa. But I think if Alabama's in the playoff, they will be ahead of Texas on the committee's food chain, so that head-to-head doesn't really come into play,
yeah,
if that makes sense.
Like you're saying, I think what you get into this cycle of – the group of teams as opposed to one team sitting there going, we've got one loss. Alabama's got one loss. We're a league champ. They're a league champ. We won there. We won. That's going to get hairy if it gets to that. So along those lines, let's hit one more. How did you think Florida State looked against in a rivalry game, a very motivated Florida team, hostile atmosphere? How did you think they looked without their quarterback?
Another great example. Let's say we're in the committee, Willie. I'm sitting there saying, you know what? They didn't have their quarterback. Florida's didn't have its quarterback. Florida's 5-7, and they barely won in the swamp. And then you're in the across the conference room table. You're saying, what are you talking about? You ever been to Gainesville? That's a rivalry game. You go down there with the quarterback making his first start of the year. All the pressure in the world. They fall behind, 12-0. Come back and win. That showed so much guts. So, like, there's just different ways to answer the question. I am in the latter camp right now. Give them the benefit of the doubt because they did come back, because they did beat Florida at the Swamp, but they'll have an opportunity this week against Louisville. I think Louisville's actually a good barometer for them. Like, if we think Florida State is a legit college football playoff team, even with your backup quarterback, you go win that game by 10 points. Now, Louisville's solid, but they just lost to Kentucky, you know. So, in if they struggle, then I think that opens the door. Now, I think I don't see many scenarios where undefeated Florida State does not make it, but I think the committee would either like to see them lose or win by two touchdowns and say they've proven that they can be a good team without them.
Yeah, so style points could come into play here this weekend.
Yeah, I totally think so, especially when you're comparing all these different scenarios. But, you know, we have not seen a situation like Florida State where a team has lost its quarterback with two games to go. You know, people compare it to Ohio State, but Ohio State in 2014, but Cardale Jones, like, came in the championship game and they won big and they proved they were still a very good team without him. They've yet to prove that they're a very good team without Jordan Travis.
Now, what do you think of Michigan State's hire, Jonathan Smith? And do you believe that Ulunglele, I think I pronounced that right.
You're close.
Yeah,
I'm close.
I'm in the ballpark. I know who you're talking about.
That could be.
I am in the ballpark with his name.
I'm giving him the award for the toughest name for an announcer to call in the history of college football.
Ayamaleava is up there.
Yeah, that one is.
Okay,
too,
so he'll make his case in the coming years. Yes.
But
Uyunglele.
Would it be smart for him to leave and go to State? Because I'm trying to figure out whether this is going to be a good marriage, knowing that the offense that they run is more of a pro-style offense, which is working for Oregon State so much so they've already won eight games. But will that translate when he gets into the Big Ten, or does he need to open it up a little bit more?
Well, you know, caveat, all coaching hires, we don't know. You know, we think we know, but on paper, this is really solid. He's extremely well-respected, does more with less. You know, they have not – I don't think they've signed a top 50 recruiting class since he's been there, and they've had top 20 teams. And we saw what the league was this year. So I think it was fortunate. Now, I'm not saying he would never leave Oregon State for Michigan State, but the fact that the Pac-12 is falling apart, I mean, you have an opportunity to get a guy who played quarterback at Oregon State. You know, 2 years ago, if you asked an Oregon State fan, was John Smith going to leave us for Michigan State? That it's, you know, you're crazy. But the circumstances have changed. So I think he is a really solid hire. He's obviously coming to a new part of the country. He is a Southern California native who's been in the Northwest. He was an offense coordinator at Boise State and Washington. I'm not the biggest DJU fan. Like, I'm not saying they can do, like, better. I mean, I think they can do better.
Well, the states that their quarterbacks are in the portal. Hauser jumped in a portal, so they're going to need some help.
Right, they will. And, like, so John, we'll find out, I guess, what Jonathan Smith thinks of DJU. You know, we're not guaranteeing that he wants to go there, but if he wants his quarterback and he brings him along, then he probably said, you know what, I got a new system I'm bringing in. I want this security blanket of my new quarterback. So, you know, that's something to monitor. But I think a really good hire. And one thing about Jonathan Smith, like, I've never met him, talked to him, but I know a lot of my colleagues at The Athletic have told me this. He might be the most normal Power Five college football coach. He's just a very normal dude in a profession with huge egos and guys who go, you know, whatever. He just seems like a really down to earth, really solid guy. But Derek, I guess you don't really care. You want a guy who's going to win 10, 11 games, right?
All I know is this. If DJU comes to Michigan State, we're all going to have to practice saying it because Derek's going to be bringing this guy up every week.
Absolutely.
Speaking of the portal, Mitch, I know that's probably the biggest topic in college sports, right, is two things, the portal and NIL. Mm-hmm. And there's all this alarming numbers, the portal. There's too many people in the portal. There's people that never come out of the portal. Are we going to see, despite all that, a record number of people in the portal when it's all said and done? Like a new high? I feel like it's going that way.
Yeah. I mean, there's no evidence.
There's no turning back.
But there's no turning back. We're already seeing it, and it's every school, every fan base, like, oh, our guy's leaving the portal. What's with our coach? No, it's happening everywhere. And I think we are going to start to see a trend of coaches being – now everyone's going to utilize the portal to plug some holes, but I think the major portal teams taking 10, 15 guys, my personal opinion, I think it's going to swing – the momentum's going to swing or the pendulum's going to swing the other way a little bit where the teams are going to – programs are going to start to realize that high school recruiting actually is the foundation, that it's difficult. The quarterback is one thing, a wide receiver to plug in. But look at Colorado. It's very difficult to rebuild an offensive line. USC is a great example. They brought in some highly regarded offensive linemen, but their offensive line struggled all year. Their offensive line was really good last year because they had guys who had been in the program 3 or 4 years. This year, it struggled. It's very difficult at certain positions to have that continuity. So I actually think that we're going to see some teams start relying less on the portal, my personal opinion, but that doesn't mean it's going to slow down the amount of kids going into the portal because, you know, everyone thinks their case is different. Everyone thinks got someone in their ear saying, you need to go there. And obviously we know the tampering, you know, and I'm not, there was a recruiting analyst who I respect. He does a really good job, but tweeted something out today about a certain quarterback saying who's not in the portal yet saying, I've been watching some film. This guy would be a really good fit at this school and this school. And I was just like, okay, we've got a national recruiting guy who's watching film of a guy who's not in the portal saying he's going to be a good fit at these two schools. Like, I don't blame the guy that's just doing his job, but, like, what are we doing here? The guy is in, you know.
Right.
He's not
it makes you
school.
Wonder, are those schools saying, hey, if you put this out there, maybe the guy, you know, like, you just wonder what all goes on in that game behind the game.
Exactly, exactly. And I mean, I'm not naive. I know that the tampering exists, and especially, and I think one other thing, I think we're going to see, like, the NIL trend of more schools getting wiser, the more NIL dollars are going to go to transfers even more. I think teams have realized that it's, I'm not saying recruits aren't getting NIL, high school recruits getting promises and all that, but it's just a much more sound investment to put it toward a guy who's at least proven he can play in college.
And if you're a quarterback, it's tough to not look at the recent history of the quarterbacks that have found the most success. I mean, look at the three leading Heisman contenders, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, all transferred. You know, last year, Caleb Williams, of course, he followed his coach, but transferred to USC, won the Heisman Trophy 2019. Joe Burrow transferred. You know, Kyler Murray kind of transferred, but did transfer.
Jalen
Baker
Hurts.
Mayfield Jalen transferred. Hurts. Yeah. Jalen Hurts transferred. It's almost like the recipe to success for quarterbacks is to transfer, but then you look at guys like Bryce Young, Carson Beck. I mean, Bryce Young won the Heisman, stuck around.
I
Carson Beck
Stetson
stuck
Bennett
around.
Technically transferred.
Stetson
and then came back.
But Mitch Light covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yep. Appreciate it. All right. Coming up next, we will chat with Clark Lee. We'll get his thoughts on what he saw on the field in Neyland Stadium this past week and also the latest with the Vanderbilt Commodores football program. Clark Lee coming up next. Caroline Valli-DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. That was a crazy, insane ending to the Iron Bowl on Saturday night.
Did you guys happen to see, there were some, I don't as a habit go on TikTok. Uh-huh. I rely on my kids to send me the TikToks that are worth watching from other people. But there was an unbelievable one of the Auburn fans chanting, here we go, we got it, you know, we got it, fourth down, here we go. And it went so quiet, so fast, and the jaws just dropping, and the phone staying on them for five, six, seven. I mean, it just said everything. It said everything
you
about that
tears,
play.
You saw tears, you saw crying.
Oh, CBS was showing it, too. Yeah. They were showing people just balling in the stands.
My little cousin is a sophomore at Auburn.
Oh my goodness.
And so I spent Thanksgiving with him and he left. You know, I was in Memphis visiting with family. He left on Friday so he could go back to Auburn, be there with all of his friends for the game. And it's, you know, with 30 seconds left, and then Jalen Milroe gets called for the illegal forward pass penalty. So they get back. That was, what, third and 20.
That
they get backed
up
even further to fourth. What was it? It was fourth and goal at the 31.
At the 31, yeah.
I'm ready. I have my phone out ready to FaceTime him because I knew he was going to be
in the
stadium and cheering, and I wanted to see his reaction. And I'm about to pick up the phone and call him, and then I was like, oh, God, oh, no, no, end. And I'm thinking, oh, no, poor Harden. He went back to school to watch the game, and that's how it ends. It was a brutal ending. It was a gut punch, but it was one of the – I always talk about certain rivalries in college football that throw everything you know out about these two teams – throw the records away, throw the teams away, the talent away, and it's just anything crazy can happen. The kick six. Yeah. The Iron Bowl is one of those rivalries every single year where Auburn just lost to New Mexico State. Alabama's going to the SEC Championship to represent the SEC West, and it comes down to a 4th and 31. Absolutely insane.
Yep.
Another thing that's absolutely insane, if we can go outside of our local Nashville, Tennessee area. There have been some rumors around the NHL. surrounding a certain Blackhawks player, Corey Perry. The Blackhawks just released a statement. I'll read the statement, and then we can go from there.
Yeah. Okay.
From the Blackhawks statement. After an internal investigation, I can't help but laugh, the Chicago Blackhawks have determined that Corey Perry has engaged in conduct that is unacceptable and in violation, if you're watching the stream, I'm grinning like a 12-year-old, and in violation of both the terms of his standard player's contract and the Blackhawks' internal policies intended to promote professional and safe work environments. As such, Corey Perry has been placed on unconditional waivers. In the event Mr. Perry clears waivers, we intend to terminate his contract effective immediately.
Wow, what did he do?
Well, this has been the talk around the league since the mysterious scratching. He was a healthy scratch around Thanksgiving. I want to say maybe the day before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting there in St. Louis, and both the media for St. Louis and us were all asking each other, anybody know anything? Because, like, when Elliot Friedman and Pierre LeBrun and some of those people aren't getting any info, as Luke Richardson said, we're keeping it internal. In other words, I think everybody knew what was going on, but nobody wanted the story to get out. So they were on lockdown. So now fast forward several days later, and now you have he's not just going to be suspended or off the shelf for a while. He is done as a Blackhawk. So I'm not comfortable saying what the rumor is, but if you go online, you'll see what the rumor is. Mm-hmm. There were people that are staunchly denying that's what it is. And so I'm not comfortable saying that maybe
you can find it. Go on the internet.
You'll find it.
But my thing is, shouldn't the Blackhawks stand? Because they're leaving this sort of vague, but we know what the rumor is, but they're leaving it vague. My thing is, if you want to dispel the rumor, you say it wasn't – you come out and say this wasn't true what is being said. It's not true. Like a Blackhawk, like this is not true. But if you're reading why they chose to release him, it would tend to think, well, something to that nature did happen. And y'all are choosing to part ways with him instead of saying, okay, we're just going to suspend you for a few games. You know, if it was something opposite of what's out there, we suspend you for a few games, bring you back in, and let it be that. Unless it was, you know, something to the physical nature, like hurting someone physically, then it's like you got to go, or harassment, then, hey, listen, you got to go. But, I mean, people go read it for yourself.
The statement leads into the rumor.
It could match up. Let's just say it could match.
But okay.
But there could have been something. I don't know. But
okay.
Corey Perry is a decorated player,
and
right?
That's what I'm saying.
He is a villain on the ice. But you heard me. When the Blackhawks were coming to Nashville, and Corey Perry, that ended up being one of the last games he'll play for the Blackhawks. But I asked Elliot Friedman about it, and he said, you know what? Corey Perry is a villain on the ice. He stirs it up intentionally. But he said he's a good person off the ice. He's a guy you want to have on your team off the ice. Well, I don't know if that happened here. Yeah.
Okay. Some people might agree. So I'm trying to figure out how a way to put this. Okay. Does he have if he wants to come back and say, no, you terminated me for bogus reasons. Do you think based upon the rumor and based upon what they said, it matches from this standpoint that he then can't come back as a player, go to the union and say, listen, they're wrong in this. They need to.
Because contracts are guaranteed.
Because if it happened, listen, even if it happened, you know, again, people, go read the article. Even if it happened, the person isn't an employee with the team. It seems like everything grown up.
Allegedly.
Everything's allegedly.
Yeah,
it was okayed by both parties, allegedly. How then can you fire or dismiss a guy and it had nothing to do, allegedly it had nothing to do with the team?
They cited, what did they say in the safe work environment?
says
violation of your contract.
Engaged in conduct that is unacceptable and in violation of the terms of his standard player's contract
standard
and Blackhawks' internal policies.
Okay. So, I mean, so they're doing this and intending to not pay him, whereas, of course, so
he's going to have to fight it. If,
right.
If it
or,
is based on that rumor.
Or he can just accept it and say, look, I've been played for a lot of teams, played for a long time. This is my first time ever having something like this. Go on. Does anybody else want to sign me? Like,
I'm sure there's going to be another team that exactly. out there that says, you know, hey,
it's
look,
gotta
we're,
be some,
we're
it's
willing
not like,
to look yeah. past.
Based upon the rumor, it's not like he's the first person that ever done that.
I feel like
you see yeah, what I'm saying?
I feel like that is probably in the history of
exactly.
sports.
Exactly. In the history of all
happened.
Sports.
Yeah. If that's what happened.
All sports, since sports yes. has started, that hadn't happened before, you
yeah.
know?
And based off of maybe some concerns of some people here, it would imply that it is not completely out of left field.
Yeah. But I, yeah. I can
keeping
see
keeping this as vague as possible.
I can see you wanting to trade him because now, allegedly, because of allegedly what happened, these two guys don't get along in the locker room. Now, I can say, okay.
I'd be pretty mad at him.
Yeah, and I'm, but that's what I'm saying. I'm, yeah. It's like, okay, we got to release you. But that doesn't dissolve me from paying you your contract. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we got to get you out of this locker room because this
is not going to work.
It's not going to work. It's yeah. going to make the locker room even worse.
But that's different than terminating
that.
The contract
exactly.
and not paying them.
Absolutely.
So, when we get Elliot on Thursday, we're going to have some things to talk about because who knows what's.
We got some TTT.
And also remember the backdrop of the Blackhawks. Right, and the scandal that they had uh-huh. on an even
yes.
more serious front
yes.
than this is, uh-huh. But so conduct of people and stuff like that, it's no. a sensitive city for that,
absolutely.
For sure. So, oh man, I'm very curious on where the story goes from now, because mm-hmm. this just happened, right? Uh-huh. They released a statement, so now all the reporters, and there are reporters
oh,
in
yeah.
Chicago
Ooh.
That are going to
They're
dig.
Chasing it down.
Yeah. And they're going to try to figure out what can we go with. Yeah. Oh, my.
Woo, boy, oh,
I always like to say, why would you watch reality TV when you could be a sports fan?
Exactly.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Let's wrap it up with some of your thoughts, your calls, and your texts.
By the way, Nashville at Chicago, December 5th.
Okay.
Leave your moms at home.
Exactly.
Oh. This
protect
Friday.
Protect your dogs. Protect your dads.
This Friday, Robbie and Rex Road will be broadcasting live for the grand opening of a new Dunkin' location in Franklin at 1441 New Highway 96 West. 1025 The Game will be on site from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Stop by and have your chance to win lots of great prizes. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Want to wrap the show up with some of your phones. But before we get into your phones, we're just kind of joking around. Joking, yeah. but serious. You know, Corey Perry has been released by the Chicago Blackhawks. And there are rumors surrounding what he did. Frank Saravalli, of course, a very dialed in, very reputable NHL reporter, has come out and said vehemently that is not true. And if it's not true, I want to know, what did he
yeah,
do?
Right. And so that's the reaction, right, to – and Frank Saravalli is definitely in the know. He's a
okay.
good reporter for Daily Faceoff. His ties are to Philadelphia. But he said, this is sad that people are running with this. The problem is because the Blackhawks have not mm-hmm. been able to or have chosen not to give any information, it's got everybody wondering,
like,
well, what did he do? Was it even worse than what was rumored
yeah.
out there? So this is one of those things. It just catches like wildfire.
Yeah.
And he's on waivers, so in theory, anybody
can pick
could
him
put
up.
In a waiver claim and have Corey Perry on their team. So they want to. I'm sure they want to know what he did because
right.
he might be useful for
exactly.
somebody.
But this is because we were talking off air about, and we did mention a little bit on air. How does the PA factor in this? Because I think unless they have an agreement, you know, all parties have an agreement, then I think it's almost you have to take it to the PA mm-hmm. as a player. You have to. I think the PA would approach you like, okay, what's going on? we need to, you know, really seriously look into this, because as a representative of the PA, I can't allow one of my, you know, one of the members to be dismissed from his job and then them not wanting to pay at all. Mm-hmm. So we need to know, we need to find out what happened, and are you going to push? Because this is sort of like a trickle-down effect. If there's no agreement amongst all three and Corey Perry just decided to go about his business, what does that do to the next player that ends up in a situation like this? Mm-hmm. The PA is there to fight for you. Be it right or wrong, mm-hmm. they're there as like a public defender.
It's like your representation.
Yeah, it's like either right or be it right or wrong, you did it, you didn't, I still got to represent you.
Very looking forward to our weekly visit, yes, with Elliot Friedman.
Oh, yeah.
On Thursday. Man.
I'm listening to his podcast. I know. I, oh, my goodness.
I wonder if he'll do as much giggling as we did. Let's get into some of your phones. Everything is on the table. Predators, the Corey Perry situation, what we discussed with the college football playoff with Mitch Light, and, of course, the Tennessee Titans. Wes in Hermitage texts in about the Greg Bedard report and his response, kind of our reaction to Greg Bedard's response on Jared's show yesterday. Wes in Hermitage says, I'd like to hear all three of your opinions. What's worse, a female reporter saying she makes up reports on live air so she doesn't look stupid, or a male reporter making up a report and publishing it and going onto a radio show to basically tell everybody that he has no facts supporting his own article? Because it's the same thing to me. I think lying is lying, and it's both bad, yeah, especially when you are viewed as a reputable source, exactly, as you're somebody that has connections to a team, a coach, whatever it might be, that the general public does not. Lying is lying.
I think in this business.
But I will say, I don't think that Greg Bedard was lying. I think that Greg Bedard ran with sources when, yeah, he shouldn't have.
He should have. If he didn't have concrete facts, then don't go with that portion of the story, because that portion, you could have made your thoughts heard or read, mm-hmm, without adding that to it. People still would have picked it up, read it. You didn't have to insert then, you know, Rand Carthon, that whole thing with Rand Carthon. You could have left that out. You know, the, you know, making up a report just so you can have something to say. I mean, in this business, you can't do that. Either way, you can't, you know. But I think people look at, you know, making up the report, you know, just to have something to say, possibly a little bit more egregious than, you know, what Bedard did. Even though I think, you know, hey, listen, if you ain't got nothing concrete or factual that you can, we ain't asking for your sources. We're just saying, give us some examples. Mm-hmm. If you can't give examples, then don't put it in there.
Yeah.
That's different from what
Chris Thompson.
Krista Thompson did. I think that's a little bit different.
Yeah,
I think
they're separate categories. Yeah, both not yeah, great.
Exactly.
When you come to journalism, but I'm not sure this guy thinks he's lying. To me, he just sort of exaggerated to fit a narrative, mm-hmm, to try to create this, and not really meaning to take a shot at Rand Carthon directly, but indirectly he, mm-hmm, did. But the narrative was like, How do I create an interesting story that kind of gives you a chance to think maybe Mike Vrabel could be the next coach of the Patriots?
Right. From a Patriots perspective.
Yeah, from a Patriots perspective.
But he should have known better.
You got to know. Yeah.
And
I don't think he realized as he was on that interview with Jared. I think he all of a sudden became very careful about what he was saying, and I don't, mm-hmm, think it really dawned on him
how
bad it looked.
How much backpedaling,
yeah,
was done. Predators in action tonight. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love and love of your people. Peace.